TFM.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Saddle Up, our dedicated Star Trek Strange New Worlds podcast. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me, as he always is my esteemed co-host, Matthew. And Matthew, I'm just going to get rid of all suspense. I'm going to tell you right now that by the end of this episode, we're going to do one of the most dangerous things we've ever done on Trek FM. We're going to sign the Scorch.
Well, yeehaw, cowboy. I mean, I'm super excited because it is shore leave. Anybody else excited? Like, come on. Come on. Who isn't excited for some shore leave?
More like stay leave.
Well, I mean, if you're a stick in the mud.
Or Fun's funeral.
Exactly, where Fun goes to die.
I wonder if the force field would protect us if we rode our horses out on the hull to sign the Scorch.
I don't know. We should ask Pike, because I bet that's how Pike signed the Scorch.
Oh, I bet you're right.
That's my headcanon. Yeah.
That's perfect. All right, everyone. Today, we're going to talk about the fifth episode of Strange New Worlds. This is Spock Amok, and here is a very quick rundown. Spock and T'Pring rendezvous at Starbase 1 for a little R&R and quality time together, but those plans go awry when work gets in the way for both. The situation is compounded when their candle ceremony abruptly ends, or rather fails to do so, and the lovers switch bodies. Throw in Number One and La'an playing Enterprise bingo and a fly fishing hat, and the story moves dangerously close to hijinks. And don't forget about those high-stake negotiations that are going on. So, Matthew, let's just jump right in. And I thought it would be good just to start with the subject of comedy in Trek, because I felt like not since DS9 has Star Trek pulled off this level of comedy. And they did it right after a deeper episode, you know, a very suspenseful episode. And then they just flipped that switch.
Yeah.
And we didn't know at first that this was going to be a comedy. I think it's something like about 10 minutes in before we really get any indication of the hijinks that await us. What did you think about this and having comedy in Star Trek again? Thank goodness, for the first time in so long.
I mean, I thought this episode, and I mean, I'm not going to apologize for giving it away right away, which is this episode is just utterly delightful. You know, I think it's a breath of fresh air. I think it's great to allow your actors to be able to show this side of them, because humor is just another way of getting to know characters and what they find funny, what they don't find funny, how they're funny. All of those things are phenomenal. And I think we found out a lot about the characters in the way in which they relate to other human beings. And their funny level, you know, like some people just don't have a very high funny level, and some people have a really high funny level, you know? And so I just loved it. I mean, I rewatching the episode, I was enjoying it so much, just because I think all the actors are having such a good time. It reminded me of, and you said that with Deep Space Nine, but it reminded me of the episodes like, Our Man Bashir or Bada Bing, Bada Bang. You know, I think it's just, it's something to which I think is lacking, and Enterprise, you know, did this well too, right? You know, you would have those episodes that would be more humorous, and I think it makes for much more rounded characters when you give them the opportunity to not always have to be so serious. You know, I feel like Star Trek kind of needed to answer the question of the Joker, why so serious, you know, because it just doesn't really work as well when you don't get to see characters from all sides. And so, I 100% love it. It sounds like this is something that you really gravitated toward as well.
Oh, yeah. I knew the title of the episode beforehand, Spock Amok, and I was thinking, okay, what are they going to do with this? I wasn't expecting this. And I tweeted right after I watched it the first time. I said, that was absolutely brilliant. I feel like Star Trek just woke up from a 20-year slumber and remembered what it is. Yeah. And I do think this is definitely, if not the best, it's certainly among a tiny handful of the best produced episodes in the last 20 years in Star Trek for me. And the reason for that is because they brought in the humor. They brought in the serious commentary. They put it all together. They gave everybody something to do. Even Ensigns Christine and Zier are in on it.
Yeah.
Everybody has something to do, and you get to see characters kind of out of their usual situations and demeanor. They just rolled everything up so well. And I think Star Trek, as much as I've enjoyed, of course, Picard Season 2, which you and I just recently covered on The Artificial Tango, and Discovery, I think Star Trek has fallen too far into this serious pit in in its modern incarnations, where everything is so high stakes all the time and so serious. And I'm here for the serious. That's why I fell in love with Star Trek growing up.
I'm here for the serious.
I'm here for the serious, you know. I love Star Trek for its social commentary. That's the reason that I care so much about it. It's the reason I created this network so we could talk about it as we do. But I also have a sense of humor, and I love fun episodes. And I'm glad that they brought that back. We've talked on here about how the first four episodes captured the spirit of the original series, but put it in a modern wrapping. And I think this one especially has done that because it brought those light moments that we loved in. And I just thought it was really fantastic. And I think it's important that Star Trek can be lighthearted sometimes.
Oh, I 100% agree with you. I mean, I really couldn't agree more. And now I will say there is only one thing in this episode that I did not like. And that's that M'Benga says that he's going fly fishing. Can Hollywood not learn what actual fly fishing is? You need to go watch A River Runs Through It, but lure fishing and fly fishing are two totally different things. Okay. And so I was super annoyed that they got that wrong.
Well, maybe it's changed by the 23rd century, Matthew.
You know, I don't think it's going to change that much because fly fishing is quite a bit different, you know. And so anyway, other than that, the episode is just phenomenal. So
yeah, but that hat, I mean, you have to forgive him.
Oh, well, that hat was fantastic. Yeah, so.
All right. Okay, so we've touched on the comedy, and we'll come back to it, of course, as we go along. And I've talked a little bit here about finding balance. And what I really loved here is that the episode is primarily a comedy. Primarily, it's very lighthearted, but there are these moments here and there where they drop in some very serious social commentary. And sometimes it's just a very quick exchange. And then sometimes it's more drawn out, like with the negotiations with the Rongovians. But three things that stood out to me are there's the question of in a culture, and again, I do feel like, and we saw this in the first episode of the series, I do feel like the writers are very much commenting on the current state of affairs in the United States and American culture, because this one applies a lot more there than it does where I live in Japan. But the idea of in a multicultural society, this interdependence on different groups and people leading to this feeling that your culture is being diluted and having this fear of losing your cultural identity. Sure. And, you know, that can mean based on your race, your color of your skin. It could be based on your sexual orientation or many aspects of how you identify yourself. So it's not one single thing. But in a culture like the Federation, you have to really be open to working together because you have so much diversity. And that's something I think that our world is struggling with right now. And that I feel like we had made a bit more progress and we've fallen back quite a bit. But anyway, that question is raised in here. There's also the one of people just looking for someone to take their point of view, which I think pretty much sums up the discourse in social media these days. And then losing someone, losing an opportunity over mere words, which is brought up in here as well, which is how so often these days people, they want to bring someone over to their side to support their cause, but they get so caught up by some tiny nuance of language that they shut that person out and they lose the opportunity. So these are not the key parts of the episode at all, but the fact that the writers can drop these elements in this otherwise fun story, I thought showed a real understanding of what Star Trek is and a deftness of being able to bring those pieces together and couch important messages in a way that might actually reach people.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. You know, it was interesting, the whole idea, worried about your culture going to be diluted was an interesting question, because I don't know if that question has necessarily always been asked by people, because, you know, I think specifically and just, you know, when I think of people coming to America, they're choosing to come here to be a part of the culture that's already here, and then they add to it. And I think that's in many ways the very essence of what the Federation is. I mean, obviously the Federation is representational of an American form of government in space, basically, where all cultures come together to create not a monoculture, but a new culture that incorporates all of these different cultures, right? And it then becomes Federation.
Well, when I was growing up, when you were growing up, we are close to the same age, we always referred to it as a melting pot, right? At least in my schools and, you know, things on television at the time, you know, Education for Kids and all, songs, it was about the great American melting pot. But these days it feels like, you know, people want the melting pot to be like a bunch of tiny little pots that are properly social distanced from one another so that nothing gets mixed together in a way that might disturb someone else.
Yeah. Well, and I think what was really interesting to me is that the episode kind of seemed to be saying that you can't really do that. You have to come together to create something, which is what Pike talked about, the fact that, you know, the way that they come to a decision is to vote together. When he was praising Spock, talking about his dedication to trying to understand cultures outside of his own, even when it's difficult and there's great personal cost. But there's this idea of like coming together to make something that works not just for yourselves, but for everyone involved. And we do that of our own desire, right? And I think that that comes with the other thing, which you, I think, rightly mentioned. And so the themes here are really connected, but the idea of having empathy and understanding towards one another is what makes that possible. To be able to put yourself into somebody else's shoes, to hear somebody else, to listen, to not disregard the words that they're saying, but also to not be so intent on listening to every single like syntax, just looking for a way to deconstruct what they're saying. And to like, you're listening with the opportunity to understand, not to misunderstand and or take offense. There's a total difference here, and that's what I think was beautiful, is Pike realized that's what they wanted.
Yeah.
They wanted somebody to understand who they are and to basically give them what Pike did, which was that honest answer, which is, hey, you know, we're actually here, honestly, because we want access to your system. You know, we want access so we can get to the other side. A byproduct of that would be great. You know, you'll get some things, we'll get some things, but really it's us not wanting the Romulans and the Klingons to have it, you know? And I think by actually opening up that honest conversation, you have a better foundation to be able to move forward. And that's another thing I found here, which is to be honest in your conversation. Don't hide your feelings from people, small and large groups, right? You know, it can be one-on-one like Spock and T'Pring all the way to these type of negotiations. It's like, because in hiding things, you're not doing anybody any favors, you know? So it's not that kind of like radical honesty we see Elnor have, but it is a move towards just openness. And I 100% agree with you. I thought that the themes here were so beautifully laid in and that they were playing so perfectly with the larger story of the negotiations to the smaller story with Spock and T'Pring, and even the even smaller story that it, because it's kind of like a side part of the story, but with Nurse Chapel and her relationship and her desire and her then honesty to say, yeah, I mean, I wouldn't mind having a relationship with somebody, but as she says, it would have to be the right guy. And, you know, so she's even being honest with herself in that sense. So you are 100% right. This episode is so funny, but yet at the same time, it's able to really capture that Star Trek spirit of helping us just look at ourselves and be able to do an emotional check on ourselves, like, and not just emotional check, but actually just like, maybe I need to sit down and think about myself and who I am and how I'm presenting myself and my own honesty towards myself and to others. You know, it's just great. I loved it.
Yeah. So let's talk about staying on this topic, because you mentioned what Pike, how he defended Spock. And in that moment, I felt like largely he was talking to T'Pring, actually, because he sensed how T'Pring was feeling about Spock, and he wanted to say something to her, but it does help in the negotiation settings. I liked how they used T'Pring in this episode in two ways, because we're talking here about this fear of losing one's cultural identity, and they use T'Pring in Spock's body to convey her attitude, because she's actually one of those who fears diversity, I feel. And she tells the Rongovians that, as a Vulcan, I sympathize with your fears that you will lose your culture to homogenization in a multilateral alliance like ours. There are times I wish I could return to Vulcan to focus on my culture instead of traveling the galaxy focusing on Starfleet. So she could not be more obviously talking about Spock. She wants Spock to come back. But at the same time, I think she wants Spock to come back, not only to be with her, but because she's very much I'm a Vulcan and wants everything to be there on Vulcan. So felt like they did a good job of using T'Pring and using this body switch situation on multi-levels here.
And I really like that you pulled that out, Chris, because I think the beauty in that is that it shows the way in which it's so easy to pull back kind of into a tribe, right? Because you feel more comfortable, because because you are kind of afraid of losing something, and you might not actually have even been intellectually honest about what you might gain, which is, I think, the beauty of obviously Spock and T'Pring changing places here, in the sense that she, I think, has a much better understanding of what it means to not only be Spock, but to be a part of the Federation at large in the way that he is, and what he's gaining from it. that is not something that's detrimental to his ability to be Vulcan, but may actually accentuate his ability to be Vulcan and even be better for her. And one of the beauties, too, is that, in all honesty, to be in a relationship is to impact one another, to make each other better versions of ourselves. And so in that, by them going through this situation, they've both been made better versions of themselves for each other, but they've also helped kind of open each other's eyes to new things that they would have never been able to understand before as well, which, again, is all of what it means to be in a good relationship with somebody.
Yeah, absolutely. So, okay, let's keep talking about the body switching, because not only did they do that, but they also made us laugh, which was very important in this episode.
Was it Friday, Chris? Because it feels like this was a freaky Friday.
It was. Not only was it Friday, it was Spock and T'Pring's Freaky Friday.
Yes. That's all I could think watching the episode. I was like, Oh, we're actually going to do Vulcan Freaky Friday.
Yeah. But how good was Gia Sandu delivering the lines as Spock? And of course, Ethan Peck was amazing. I was really just blown away by both of them. And how they delivered their lines, their mannerisms as each other. It's very subtle, but especially T'Pring, Gia Sandu was brilliant, I thought.
I 100% agree with you. It did feel like that they spent, you know, maybe a few days just following each other around as these characters, so they could kind of understand, okay, what are the mannerisms that they do as these characters, all of those type of things. And it worked really well. You know, the way that Peck kind of makes his voice just slightly higher.
Yeah.
He doesn't have quite the stop and start that he does when he speaks.
Yeah.
She picked that up and absolutely ran with it, and I think was perfect in her portrayal. You know, there... For the 1 minute that Pike was there, when he was like, "I'm sure you can now see the difference in our mannerisms," and Pike's like, "Oh yeah, sure,
yeah, totally."
You know, but if you were watching long enough, they absolutely were doing the mannerisms of the other person in a way that made it very clear that they were not who they were supposed to be. So, I thought it was wonderful. Because it really is such a silly idea. But, you know, the beauty is that with Vulcans and their Katras and the way they do things, absolutely, 100%, you know, this makes sense. It doesn't break canon or anything. It's just, it's a fun way to be able to allow them to go deeper into what we talked about just a minute ago, which is really this silliness actually allows the characters to be able to grow. And to move forward. And to me, like, I just feel like that's good writing in the end.
Absolutely. I love the moment when T'Pring, Spock in T'Pring's body, is there and gets the call from the colleague, Katil.
Yeah.
And she says, T'Pring is not here. I mean, I am not, never mind.
Yeah.
And then her colleague starts telling her something and she says, "I'm sure that I'm great at this."
Yeah, that was really funny.
Just the deliveries were so brilliant. And yeah, I think you said everything really well there about the importance of this situation for their character growth. And it was, of course, played for comedy on the surface, but it is a great way of moving the characters forward. And we see that at the end when we're there in Spock's bed. And then it goes away, and then they play "I'm Looking" by the Kings and Queens out into space. And I love that too, because it reminded me a little bit of those moments on DS9 where we would pull away from the station with jazz playing, or like something you don't expect in that situation. So I thought that was wonderful.
Well, and it was kind of fun because, you know, the ability to be on the starbase, and you have all the different, you know, biospheres, and I'm sure there probably are like actual nightclubs there and those kind of things that for crew members to go enjoy. I mean, you know, and hey, Star Trek III showed us nightclubs do still exist because we saw McCoy, you know, go to one.
That's right.
And so I thought all of that just worked so well. And, you know, in all honesty, it kind of showed the validity of like why Deep Space Nine worked when you stay in a place more than just an episode, because it does really allow you to do all types of stories. And man, this space station, this would allow you to do every kind of story because, you know, they've got all the biospheres. So
exactly. Are you with me in that this episode once again leaves you wanting more Ortegas? We need an Ortegas story. I think you've said before, she's really funny, but we haven't gotten that story that focuses on her yet. So we only get these bits and pieces of her here and there.
Yeah. I think that she is really enjoyable. And what I think is great is the way in which she has a lot of relationships with a lot of different people on the show. But you can tell that she has a fantastic relationship with Chapel. And I really enjoy that, you know, the way in which they're kind of able to keep each other honest. You can kind of tell they're the type of characters that their friendship is one where they save each other if they need to.
Mm-hmm.
All that kind of stuff. They're there for each other no matter what. And I think that's really fantastic. But I would love to know more about who she is. I mean, just the fact that she mentioned that she's been in a fight with Alirpa was pretty fantastic. So...
Well, I get the feeling that, of course, she looks very young, but I get the feeling that she's been on the Enterprise for a long time, and she has lots of stories to tell. That's just the feeling that I have from her. Like, she's not one of the newbies. She's the people who play jokes on the newbies, right?
Mm-hmm. Right, exactly. But, I mean, it will be interesting if they finally kind of let us get a sense of who she is as a character. I think that would be, you know, really nice, especially since I feel like all the other characters, we've gotten at least a taste of who they are.
Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah. One other character thing to note here, Hemmer is not in this episode. Do you think that's because Hemmer can't do funny?
I think it's more because Hemmer's idea of being on shore leave is even worse than number one and
probably right.
Noonien Singh, because I think he just spends his time in engineering, probably like polishing things, reading
the manuals.
Yeah. He's Scotty, reading the manuals. Right? Yeah. He's not only reading the manuals, but he's also writing. I think that's probably what he does, is he writes about his adventures and in engineering. It's the Hemmer Chronicles, and it's really an engineering textbook with fun, quote-unquote, anecdotes. So,
I wish this podcast were visual so people could see the air quotes that you just did. That was funny.
Well, I mean, I did quote-unquote air quotes, you know, like air quotes, think, think.
But it's not the same as the visual. Okay, let's talk about Enterprise Bingo. I really, really enjoyed this part of the story because I can totally see this being a real thing, that on the ship, the ensign class and under has this game that they play and they got this checklist. And if you look at the pad that lists the challenges, they are use the transporter to reflavor gum.
Which was hysterical. Is that how does that even work?
Well, actually, the first time I just let it go by, the second time I was thinking, like, how does this work? And I'm guessing that the original state of the gum is in the pattern buffer or whatever the history.
I think you're right, yeah.
And so when they use the transporter, it restores the gum to its original state.
Yep, yeah, that makes sense. I like
it. And Laan says, spearmint again. Yes. The second one is a phaser stun duel.
Which was great. I love number one being like, oh, that stings.
And Laan's line and the way it was delivered, are we having fun yet? was so like, I'm so sorry I did that to you. The third one is a turbo lift two-floor shout challenge. The fourth item is set the universal translator to Andorian. The fifth is gravity boot hang challenge. Sixth is medical tricorder challenge, Vulcan marsupial. Seventh is food replicator challenge, durian fruit, which I took as a Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild reference, but I don't know. Number eight is sneak a tribble into the transporter buffer. Now, I've seen this one get some fans upset online because they're not supposed to know about tribbles yet, but I thought that was kind of a silly thing to complain about. Plus, anything that's on a pad like this, these are like the old jokes that they used to put in, like Mike Okuda would put in, and we never saw them until we got the HD restorations, and then we can read all this funny stuff on the screens. So it doesn't really matter. Number nine is sit in the captain's chair. And number 10 is the EV suit challenge, unsanctioned spacewalk. And then finally, number 11, the icing on the cake, is signing the Scorch, which is the oldest unreplaced tile on the Enterprise's hull. So I thought this was really fun. And they couldn't have picked two better characters to put together and have them go through the process of playing this game.
The thing about this was, is the way in which it was the silly lesson about putting yourself in other people's shoes and experiencing something that you wouldn't normally experience because you want to understand another person. And the way in which that can open your eyes to a new way of thinking, a new way of life, or just a really enjoyable experience. And so I thought this was great. They were hysterical together. You know, their whole good cop, bad cop thing was
was great.
Of course, Noonien Singh is the bad cop. What's great about this episode is that it confirms to me that they have not only done a fantastic job with casting in this show, but they've done a fantastic job of allowing you to get to understand who these characters are so that when we get to in this episode where we're supposed to be having fun with our characters, we are having fun with our characters, right?
That's amazing that they did that in four episodes because I had the same thought. I thought, I feel like I already know these characters so well. And so this all works perfectly fine because, I know the personalities of these characters and I can see how they're playing differently. I mean, to give you an example from Deep Space Nine that doesn't work because it happens too early is Dramatis Personae, where it's not a funny episode. But it's that case where aliens have taken over the bodies of our characters and they're acting differently. But we don't know the characters well enough yet for that kind of thing to work. But here, now it's easier to pull off with comedy, I would say, than a situation like that. But still, I really felt like I already know these characters quite well. And it surprised me because I thought this is only the fifth episode. How did they make me feel connected to these characters so quickly?
You know, I'm going to reference a show that people may roll their eyes at, but in all honesty, the very first season of Grey's Anatomy was phenomenal at this. By episode one, you felt like you knew who everybody was. And by episode two, you hit the ground running. And by episode four, you absolutely were in. And I think if you're able to create in your writing enough of an archetype of a type of character, but at the same time, give them some nuance, that's the beauty. And I think that's kind of what they've done in this show, is that each one of these characters is a slight archetype that we're familiar with. So we can immediately kind of connect with the character and understand who they are. We're just waiting for the show to continue to elucidate that, right? And I think that's what we've got. You know, and that, again, that does take deft writing, because if you do that and the characters aren't interesting or they just feel like an archetype without anything else to them, it's boring. And so I think that it's the actors, it's the writing, And then, of course, it all comes down to performance. And those three things this show has in spades, I believe. And so, and as an example, you know, I think one of the characters to which this has worked the best with is one that has had screen time, but we haven't gotten super personal with her, except for this episode, which is Christine Chappell. Right?
Mm-hmm.
We've seen that she's great at her job. She's funny. She's kind of light and vivacious as a character. And yet, we actually saw that there is a deeper side to her. She just doesn't like showing it. Why? Because she's actually afraid of commitment. Like, that's her character. Right. That's who she is. But she would be willing to try commitment if the right person came along, and that just has not happened. And part of that is because she's been picking guys or picking people that... you know, she's only looking for fun and she thinks that's what they want. But she's now run into this character, this vast, immovable object known as Mr. Spock,
yeah,
that she doesn't know what to do with. And she has kind of realized, oh, this is the person that I would actually kind of, I think, maybe want to try something special with. And the way she plays that here is just phenomenal. And so Yeah, she's an example, but I think the rest of the crew has been able to do that as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see where they go with the Chapel Spock story, because I guess they can't really have them become a couple in any way. Otherwise, that would be something that... I'm not going to be the canon police or anything, but I can definitely see that really upsetting people. I've seen some people already saying, oh, the writers are making a huge mistake with this whole Chapel being into Spock thing right now. It's too soon. I don't know about that. We don't know what was going on in her head. And maybe she was in love with Spock for years and years and years, and we didn't know, because we only caught those glimpses in the original series.
Yeah. And I mean, just in all honesty, how many of us have... kind of quote unquote been in love with somebody and yet they were unavailable, and so we might be with other people and all that kind of stuff. That's life, right? That's legitimately just how it's happened to so many people. That's why writing this story could be really interesting, because we are going to see this friendship blossom, but we're also going to see, I think, that there's a deeper sense for her of what she might want, and it's going to go unrequited forever. So,
yeah. Well, she makes that comment to him here about just be in the future, be honest about what you can and cannot offer.
Mm-hmm.
And when she first said that, I felt like she's talking about what can he offer her? Like, is he going to be available or something? And then she says, I just mean be honest with yourself, but I'm not sure that's actually what she meant by that. I feel like that's a little bit related to her seeing him as that right guy. And I think that came across too when she was sitting there in the Starbase talking to Ortegas about relationships towards the end.
No, absolutely. I mean, she clearly has feelings for Spock that go beyond friendship and the desire just to be friends. And I think, again, to me, I think that's an interesting thing, because I having experienced it myself, where, you know, you go through the frustration of, you know, liking somebody more than they're willing to like you or can. And, you know, at the same time, you also are doing your best to be a good friend. It's a tough road to hoe, you know, it really is. So, good luck to Christine. And I'll be very interested, like you said, to kind of just see how they handle this, because, it is a story to which there's not a lot of development room.
Yeah.
But it is something to which too, I mean, you know, obviously with the way TOS was, you were never going to get this type of development at all.
Yeah.
So it is nice to be able to have this here. So
while we're talking about Christine Chappell, I just want to stay in sick bay for a minute, because you mentioned on an earlier episode about medical technobabble that we get in here. And I love that here we get a bunch of technobabble, but it's also comedic in what they're doing, mm-hmm. where they're putting,
yeah,
they're putting Navalan sea urchin, ground Navalan sea urchin on Spock and T'Pring's foreheads as a way of transferring the Katra back and forth. And I imagine in the U.S., sea urchin is probably not something that you're likely to eat very often, but my son loves sea urchin. In Japanese, it's called uni, and it's rather expensive among sushi. And I was watching this, and I was thinking, oh, God, they're wasting. That's a lot of sea urchin right there. And my son would love to eat that instead of you spreading it on people's foreheads.
Apparently, it's quite noxious, too. You know, one quick note about that, too, and I'm glad you brought that up, because as a scene, you know, they're talking about that Christine says magic with yeah. dealing with the mind and the Katra and all those kind of things. But, I mean, in the end, I think Christine is more correct, because the Katra is not just the mind. It is like
right.
the very soul of a Vulcan. So yeah. I find that interesting, because it is something that goes beyond science, really, right? Mm-hmm. And our understanding of it to a much bigger question. So I just kind of love that they touched on that just a little bit, because when you're talking about Vulcans and Katras, that's what we're talking about, is the unexplainable.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I love that.
Well, and that's not out of the blue either. At the beginning of Star Trek III,
yeah.
the idea of the Katra being kind of magic or mysticism is already there and yeah. established.
Until you kind of come face to face with it here. I mean, again, you are dealing with this thing that's happened, which shouldn't be able to happen, you know, mm-hmm. but has. And so, yeah, I mean, I think it's... It's very silly and all that, but it is actually pointing to something which I think is really neat to touch on.
Yeah. Well, let's move on to a final point before we get into the final thoughts, and that's just the negotiations themselves and how these Rongovians react to different cultures. I thought this was quite interesting, and we've talked about it a little bit already, about them being someone who... maybe is looking for someone to share their point of view. And I think you explained it well earlier, but I thought the name was interesting, the Rongovians. I don't know if it's a play off the word wrong because of how they react to the situations.
Well, it's a fascinating thing because I think everybody reacts to them wrong
yeah.
in the sense is that because they take on the persona of the people that they're talking to, and they take mm-hmm. that wrongly. What they want
right.
is yeah. for somebody to actually be like them
yeah,
and to understand them and understand where they're coming from. And so to me, I thought that was, it makes sense. But the fact that Pike picks up on that, because if you're listening in the conversation at the beginning, they talk about their people and who they are, and that they have this empathy, and empathy is the most important thing to them. And so Pike puts those pieces together by being in all of these negotiations with them. And I think what I liked about that was the way in which it shows that Pike is, you know, he's definitely a captain who enjoys the action, but he's also an observant person, and
yeah.
he's paying attention, and not just paying attention, but he's doing it in a way to be able to actually understand, and not just understand for himself, but actually to understand from as many sides as possible. And so I thought that this really did a great job of showing that instead of just kind of telling us about it. You know, we actually just got to see it play out, which was great.
Yeah. And I think it's quite a contrast to the tone of the original series and Kirk, where it's like, we know the best way for societies to work, the best way for you to do something. And so we're going to tell you, or in some cases, we're going to actually make changes, like A Taste of Armageddon, where they get rid of the whole system of warfare, or The Apple, where they get rid of Vol because they don't like how the people are being subjugated. And you have those types of things. But here, like you say, it's more like, let's look from different angles. And Pike is quite good at that. the Rongovians, in addition to the name perhaps being getting things wrong, I thought the makeup was also interesting because it's sort of like zebra stripes. Mm-hmm. And although scientifically this is no longer really a valid interpretation of the purpose of the stripes, traditionally we've thought of zebra stripes as being a sort of camouflage to confuse, right? Mm-hmm. And here, the Rongovians are adapting to the person that they're talking to. So I think the other side is always kind of being thrown off, and Pike figures it out at the end. Mm-hmm. And even April is like, what are you doing, Chris? What are you doing? Right.
Yeah. No, I mean, I definitely agree. And again, what it does show is just the way in which Pike is doing a good job of digging deeper, looking beyond the surface level, which is really important, which, you know, I would argue that in many ways, in some of those instances you mentioned with Kirk, you know, that's what Kirk is doing too, right? He's looking deeper, and the deeper level of what's happening in those societies and why they're thinking the way they do. And he's not just saying, oh, you shouldn't do this, but it's like, you're acting this way because, you know, so, I mean, it is a classic Star Trek captain thing to do, which is to try and pay attention to all aspects and then put it all together so you come up with a solution in the end. And I think Pike does that well here. And, you know, it helps that Anson Mount's performance is so fun. Plus, I mean, he got the green wraparound. So, I mean,
oh, I can't believe we didn't mention that yet.
You know, but that yeah. honestly looked so comfortable as something to wear. I'm like, yeah. I want that.
Yeah. Yeah. I think if I were the captain, I would be wearing that one most of the time because it does look a lot more comfortable mm-hmm. than
yeah.
the usual uniform. I will say the one thing about that is that in the original series, because the Delta was just like an embroidered part of the mm-hmm. uniform, they could have the Delta turned on its side down there around the waist, which looked great. But here they have that because it's the design of the wraparound. But then he also has the
yeah.
badge.
And he's got the double Delta.
Yeah, that for me as a designer kind of, I don't like duplicating elements and mm-hmm. nearby like that. And that one kind of visually, I thought didn't work mm-hmm. completely as well as I would like, but I know why they have mm-hmm. them both. But that was cool to see the green wraparound.
And yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I love that.
Yeah. You know, I thought it was just a really well done storyline for the episode. And again, this is one of the things that has really worked with this show for the most part, is that we keep writing the thematic elements, the character elements, and the plot elements are all flowing together in a way that feel effortless. And that's really important. You know, we talked a lot about on Star Trek Picard season 2, the idea of why that show is working for us, because it felt like we were more worried about what's happening with the characters than necessarily the plot. Here, it feels like all of that's important, and I'm not having some of the plot issues that I ended up having with, say, Picard, right? Mm-hmm. And part of that, I think, is because, you know, it does help to be able to write stories that have connection, but also have their own resolution by the end of yeah. that episode, you know?
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
It's worked out really, really, and it makes sense for, you kind of understand why Star Trek had the format it did for so many years, right? You know?
Right.
So it actually yep. works. You can still do it. And I think Strange New Worlds is doing a fantastic job of showing us that the formula for Star Trek absolutely still works.
Absolutely. All right. Well, those sound like final thoughts, but what other final thoughts do you have about this episode, and what's your rating?
I mean, I just adored this episode. It's just so good. I don't think there was really anything about the episode that I didn't like, other than the one tiny nitpick about Mbenga's fly fishing, and I wish they would get that right on shows because it's not the same. But otherwise, this is just kind of, I would say, the perfect episode of Strange New World so far. I love every character moment. I enjoy every moment of watching it. It's an episode I will probably watch many times over just because it's so much fun. And so I'm going to give this 9.75 signatures on the Scorch. Yes, the 0.75, they were not quite able to finish their signature because they got caught. So,
yeah, that's a perfect rating. A rating what about befitting you, Chris? Of hijinks. Yeah, I just adored the episode. Like I said at the beginning, I think that it is one of the best episodes of Star Trek produced in the past 20 years. It feels like Star Trek again. All the elements that I love put together. I think these writers completely understand Star Trek. And just, I hope we get more like this one. This is going to be hard to top. And of course, I don't want Star Trek to become a comedy. I like to have episodes like this from time to time. I don't want Star Trek to have lots of humor in it all the time.
That's why they have Lower Decks.
Yeah. Because I think that, you know, that's not what I'm here for, really. I'm here for the serious, as I said at the beginning, for the social commentary. But I am a person with a sense of humor, and I love that. And this episode just hit all the marks for me, and I'm going to give this one 10 packs of spearmint gum.
It's a good choice.
All right, everyone, we would love to hear your thoughts on Spock Amok. There are many ways for you to share those with us. Perhaps the best is to go to Facebook and join the Babel Conference. That is our listeners group. If you're already a member, you know how it works. But if you're not and you're joining for the first time, please be sure to answer the questions and agree to the rules of the forum so that I can let you in. And you can find the Babel Conference by typing Babel, B-A-B-E-L, into the search field on Facebook or the whole name, the Babel Conference. If you'd like to send us email, you can do that by going to our website, trek.fm/contact. Use the form you find there, choose to send to a show, and choose Saddle Up. And that'll come to Matthew and me by Pony Express. And in social media, Instagram, Twitter, everywhere you can find us. Our username is TrekFM. Now, Matthew, when you're not working on your beard that is as ridiculous as your proposals, where can people find you?
Well, you can find me all over the place under social media under the name MattRushing02. Of course, I am also here in the net worth with quite a few shows. So all over the place, got the 602 Club, which is our general geek show talking about all of the fandoms we love outside of Star Trek, because we talk a lot of Star Trek, like on shows such as Literary Treks, The Orb, The Artificial Tango, and Warp 5. Literary Treks about the books and the comics of Star Trek. The Orb, Chris, is where we talk about Star Trek Deep Space Nine. The Artificial Tango, Star Trek Picard. And Warp 5 is where we're walking through right now every single episode of Enterprise, celebrating 20 years of that show. And we're in the second season. We're having a blast, so hope you'll check that out. And then, of course, over on the Nerd Party Network, you'll find me with two shows. One is a completed show that I did with Drea Kaufman called Owlpost, and we did every single chapter. We talked about every single chapter of the Harry Potter series one chapter at a time, which was so much fun. And then, of course, you can also find me over on Aggressive Negotiations with John Mills as we talk Star Wars each and every week. And Chris, I'm excited for you to tell people where they can find you, especially if, you know, maybe they want to have a good laugh with you about this episode.
Well, you can find me in the bar on Starbase One. I'm going to be ordering some drinks that haven't been invented yet and enjoying my time there in the biospheres. And maybe I'll go fly fishing with my Benga Matthew just to find out what he's really doing. But when I'm not doing that, you can find me on all the shows that you mentioned on the network that we do together. And also Larry Nemechek and I do the Ready Room from time to time. And there's Interphase, and I'm in many episodes of many shows in the back catalog here. So check all of those out if you're interested in hearing more of my thoughts about Star Trek. And when I'm not podcasting, of course, I'm very busy with all the magazine stuff. And you can find out about all of that through my social media. And if you'd like to chat with me, that is the place to go. Twitter is where I'm most active. My username is C. Brian Jones, letter C, and Brian with a Y. And I'd love to talk to you there. And if you'd like to help us keep this show and all the shows that we mentioned, everything that we're doing on the network going, we could really use your help through Patreon. To find out how to get involved, just visit patreon.com/trekfm. That's patreon.com/trekfm to find out how. Become an associate producer. Get involved in other ways. We would love to have your support. And I want to send a huge thank you to everyone who's supporting us right now. We would not be here without you. Matthew, I am looking forward to next week talking another episode of Strange New Worlds with you, and I just wonder if Hemmer is going to be in it.
Well, I'm not sure. Hopefully he didn't get lost in engineering, you know, as he's been polishing everything, but I'm very excited to do that, Chris, so I think it's time to saddle up and lock and load.